This podcast discusses topics involving human death. Listener discretion is advised. My name is Ivy, and welcome to the Taphophile Diaries. A taphophile, also sometimes called a tombstone tourist, is defined as an individual who has a passion for and enjoyment of cemeteries, epitaphs, gravestone rubbing, photography, art, and history of deaths. So, if this sounds like you, you might just be a taphophile. Episode 2, Grave Bells and Safety Coffins. Taphophobia is the fear of being buried alive, also known as a premature burial, something that, for much of human history's past, happened on rare occasion and usually by accident. If someone's heart and breathing slowed to a point that it was nearly undetectable, they might be mislabeled as being dead and thus buried. And again, although this was rare, public fears over premature burial would grow and grow and grow, to the point that medical professionals began to study and publish writings about what could cause someone to appear to be dead while actually still alive. One such writing is titled, The Uncertainty of the Signs of Death, published in 1746. The book details, and I quote, "Persons supposed to be dead, not always really deprived of life," and it recounts examples of this occurrence, including a man who was found to have bit his own hands in a grave, a sign that he had been buried alive. Another man had, and I quote, "come to life" during his own funeral service, and during an outbreak of the plague, one young man who was believed to have died of the disease was found to be alive while being carried to his own grave, just in the nick of time. In another shocking example, they wrote about a pregnant woman who was believed to be dead, and while the surgeon was cutting the child out of her womb, she, too, had actually still been alive. But one of my favorite examples is a classic buried alive trope that I've come across many times. It tells the story of a woman who had been accidentally buried alive and who had fallen victim to grave robbers the next day after her interment. They tried to steal a ring from her finger, but they couldn't remove it. Their solution? To simply cut off her finger to retrieve the ring. So they tried to cut it off, but she was still alive, and this jolted her awake, leaving all parties involved startled and confused. Now, this is a very common recycled legend. When I was in Edinburgh, Scotland, a few years back, I took part in a late-night cemetery tour where we were told the exact same story of a wealthy woman dug up by grave robbers who tried to cut a ring off of her finger, awakening her. Of course, it is hard to know just how many of these stories are true and which are the result of writers and papers looking for that next shocking, eye-catching story, knowing that stories like this sell. But even many legends like this are still based in some kind of fact. Perhaps there was a woman at some point in time that was found to be alive when her finger was cut by attempted grave robbers, and eventually this story made its way into other cities who claimed it happened in their very own cemeteries. Who knows? And what these stories tell us, regardless of how many of them actually happened, is that this was a real and deep fear in many people. In 1798, a German priest, P.J. Pessler, would try to remedy the problem of premature burial, which, again, was not a prevalent problem, but the fear was there, and he suggested that all coffins be fitted with a cord that would run through tubes leading to church bells. This way, if someone woke up and found that they were buried alive, they could pull the cord and ring the bell, alerting people who could come to their aid and dig them up. But this idea was a bit too impractical to execute. Other safety coffins and variations of this were suggested, like one of Pessler's colleagues, Pastor Beck, who offered up the idea that coffins be fitted with a small trumpet-like tube that could be used to smell the dead buried below in their coffin. This way, priests could check for the normal smell of decomposition, one of the most certain ways to know if someone is actually dead. This would also allow them to hear possible cries for help from the grave. By the 1800s, ideas for how to implement safety coffins continued. In 1829, and also in Germany, something known as a portable death chamber was devised. It consisted of a small chamber which would be placed over someone's grave, also equipped with a bell that the person buried alive could ring, and a window for the living to view and monitor them. The body wouldn't be fully buried so that if they showed signs of life, they could quickly be released. But if they did begin to putrefy and decay, the body would be lowered fully into their grave and the death chamber could be removed and reused for another burial. Also in 1829, you can see how this desire to invent such a device was really trending. Dr. Johann Terberger designed a system involving a bell that hung above a grave. A string would connect the bell to the body buried below that they could pull to ring the bell and alert a cemetery night watchman that they were alive. But his design came with major improvements compared to previous bell ringing ideas, including a cover around the bell to keep it from ringing accidentally, and a cover to prevent rainwater from running down the tube into the coffin, and netting to prevent bugs from getting in as well. If the bell did ring, there was also a second tube which the night watchman could use to pump fresh air into the coffin to keep the person alive as they were dug up, a task that could take a while. It is estimated that the average person could live only 5 hours on the air supply in a coffin. So if it took 1, 2, 3, 4 hours for somebody to wake up after their premature burial, time was really limited for somebody to A, discover and hear that they are alive, and B, dig them up in time. So why were there so many ideas all being thought up around the same time in the late 1700s and continuing up until the 1900s? Well, not only was this the fault of newspapers and publishers who were really writing and recycling a lot of these same buried alive stories, really pushing this fear to the people because this was a way to sell copies, but we also had other writers, such as Edgar Allan Poe, to maybe partially blame for some of this. In 1844, Poe wrote a short horror story called The Premature Burial, which tells the story of a main character who fears being buried alive. He likely wrote this having known about the ever-growing fear of premature burial, and of course, the popularity of his works meant that more people who read his short stories, like this one, were also now exposed to this fear, keeping it alive and thriving. And although the stories of these inventions of grave bells, some of which were fully illustrated and some of which were even patented, as interesting as this is, there is little evidence that these grave bells were actually implemented, and there is no documented cases of any that were used to save a life. Again, actually being buried alive was super rare. If it did happen, the chances of you waking up within the 5-hour maximum window of life that you have and being able to ring such a bell is so unlikely. But illustrations and stories of these grave bells have taken over some parts of the internet and have led to a lot of misconceptions about how often they were actually used. And I know that I am personally a victim of this. Years ago, I remember coming across these illustrations of these grave bells, and I was fully convinced that this is something that we used to actually do, but we didn't. I should also mention that you might see people online claim that the phrase "saved by the bell" also comes from the use of these grave bells, but this is also not true, and I believe that term actually came from boxing. and not from somebody being saved by ringing a bell after being buried alive, because again, these were never really used, and thus no one was ever saved from one. Some online sources also claim that these grave bells are where we get the term dead ringer from, but this is also not true. If you have also been fooled by these claims, like myself, you're not alone, and this can actually be traced back to one main internet source that started it all. In 1999, a chain letter titled Life in the 1500s circulated, which made the claim that back then, one in every 25 coffins that were exhumed were found to have scratch marks inside, indicating that one in every 25 people were buried alive. This chain letter also made the claim that these bells were often used to alert someone if this were the case, and again is where the term dead ringer came from. The etymology for the term dead ringer is a whole other story, but it did not originate from anything to do with grave bells. And one in every 25 people were not being buried alive, and again, these grave bells were never really implemented. Unfortunately, people lying on the internet in chain letters is a tale as old as time, or at least as old as the internet. So although this widespread idea that we used to hang bells above graves has been somewhat debunked, there are other interesting methods that some paranoid people, particularly those with the money to afford it, did take to feel reassured that if they were buried alive, someone would be able to notice and help them. A man named Robert Robinson, who died in 1791 in Manchester, had his coffin fitted with a movable glass pane. He also asked that his relatives visit his grave and look for signs of life, like his breath fogging the glass. But a year later, in 1792, Duke Ferdinand of Brunswick also had a window installed in his coffin to allow light in, an air tube to provide him with fresh air, and the coffin was fitted with a lock instead of being fully nailed shut like most other coffins. In his pocket, he was also buried with two keys, one for the lock on his coffin, and another for the lock on the door to his tomb. So, in some cases, safety coffins have been actually made and utilized more often. Another famous example of a safety coffin is that of Count Michael de Karnis-Kharniki, a chamberlain to the Tsar of Russia, who had his own safety coffin patented in 1897 called the Le Karnis. This coffin would detect movement inside, and if it had detected it, a tube allowing air into the coffin would open, a flag would raise, and a bell would ring. However, similar to grave bells, this didn't really catch on. The Le Karnis was too sensitive and could easily be triggered by the movement of our body as we decay, which can cause us to bloat and expand. One of Karnis-Kharniki's assistants had also been buried in one during a demonstration and while alive, of course, but it didn't go well and the signaling system failed. The breathing tube did open and the assistant did live, but this would result in the end of the Le Karnis. And the trend of trying to create a more elaborate safety coffin certainly didn't die out. In fact, more recently, in 1995, Fabrizio Caselli designed a modern-day safety coffin that was fitted with an emergency alarm, a flashlight, an intercom system, a breathing apparatus, and a heart monitor and stimulator. However, this one didn't catch on, not because it necessarily failed, but because the possibility of being buried alive is nearly eradicated with our modern system of embalming. It would be nearly impossible for an embalmer to not notice signs of life while preparing a body for burial. In fact, in February of 2014, a man named Walter William was incorrectly pronounced dead, but while in the embalming room, his legs began to move and the coroner noticed that he was still breathing. So if the topic of being buried alive has instilled a little taphophobia in you, just know that this is something we don't have to fear anymore with the systems we have in place between when someone dies or is believed to be dead and when they are buried. My main sources I used in this episode, and other sources if you want to learn more on the subject of premature burial and safety coffins, are all linked in the show notes below. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at The Taphophile Diaries for photos and updates on future episodes. And I did recently release an entire website and blog to go along with this podcast. So in between episode releases, you can go enjoy even more cemetery content, especially if you are a believer in the paranormal like I am, because I've got a lot of really interesting cemetery haunts over on my blog as we speak. And of course, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave a rating or review. That is the best and easiest way to support your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to join me next time for episode 3 of The Taphophile Diaries. This podcast is produced, researched, and edited by me, Ivy Boyd. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.